much, but it's certainly a huge, if not the major event within the church. Easter is getting closer. And as we get near to Easter, or nearer to Easter, what is it, 4 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks this Sunday? So I thought we'd look at people or groups of people who were around at the time of Jesus' crucifixion. They might have been involved in the run-up. They might have been at the cross. And today, as you may have gathered from the readings that Sandy and Graham have brought to us, it's the role of the chief priests, and in particular the high priest, Caiaphas. I don't know how much you know about Caiaphas and who he was and whatever, but if you want his full name, it's Joseph ben Caiaphas. And he was the son-in-law of Annas, who was high priest, a couple of high priests before him. But we're told in John 18:13 that when Jesus was arrested, he was first taken to Annas rather than Caiaphas, and then passed on to Caiaphas, indicating that Annas, his father-in-law, still had authority within the structures and what was going on. When Annas finished as high priest in AD 15, there were one or two who followed him. And I think they were a couple of his sons as well, before he was instrumental in Caiaphas being appointed to the role. A role which he kept from AD 18 to AD 37. So nearly 19 years, which indicates that he was compliant with the Roman authorities. Because basically, the average time for a high priest to serve was 3 years before they upset somebody and got removed. So for Caiaphas to last 19 years, he was probably kowtowing, as they say, to people to keep in that position. He and Pilate apparently were quite good buddies and overlapped in their role of about 10 years. So they got to know one another in their roles and what was going on. And it is thought that Caiaphas only lost his position as high priest because Pilate failed to quell a rebellion. And he got wrapped up in that, so they both got the push. And it went on to somebody else. But in the role of high priest, his authority was second only to that of the Roman governor. So he was a powerful person. And he would have been very wealthy too. And obviously there's question marks about where some of his wealth came from. Did it come from those who were exchanging money in the temple courts and everywhere else and selling animals for sacrifice? But he would have been aware of what Jesus did when he entered the temple courts and threw out the money changers and the people. As he said, you know, my father's house is a house of prayer, but you've made it a den of thieves, a house of thieves. The high priest was responsible for the spirituality of the nation. It was his role to make sure that the spiritual nature of the nation remained or was at a good level. It was only the high priest who could enter the Holy of Holies on the Day of Atonement to offer the necessary sacrifices for the sins of the people. And it is also said that if the high priest sinned, it was as though the whole nation sinned. So again, as we look at some of the things that Caiaphas got up to, the implications for the nation and everything else. He had great influence and power. He was in charge of the Sanhedrin, made up of priests from three main religious sects at the time. The Sadducees, of which Caiaphas was one, the Pharisees and the Essenes. And historians think that at that time, probably the Sadducees were the smallest of the groups of those religious people. but had the most influence. And as I say, Caiaphas was a member of the Sadducees, and it's assumed and thought that all those who were the top notch of the Sanhedrin were also Sadducees. So they had a controlling influence on what happened. All the advisors that Caiaphas had were Sadducees, so they would think the same as him, and they would he would have more leverage on what happened and what went on. Sadducees as a group did not believe in the resurrection and the afterlife. They didn't believe in angels or any spiritual forms. So they were working, as they got to know Jesus and know more about him, to make sure that it didn't happen, that Jesus didn't rise from the dead. We read of Caiaphas in the Bible, not just at the trial and around the trial time. I think the first mention is in Luke's Gospel in chapter 3 and verse 2, when he would have been a priest rather than the high priest. And then after the raising of Lazarus in John 11, 45 to 54, and again after Jesus had ascended back to heaven and the apostles were about and Peter and John were being tried, Caiaphas is mentioned there. The reference in Acts also indicates of the continuing influence of his father-in-law, Annas, because they're both mentioned there. So again, all through Caiaphas's time as high priest, it appears as though Annas was in the background, nudging his son-in-law along, guiding him and perhaps causing some of the decisions to be made. Because of the rising popularity of Jesus, especially after the raising of Lazarus, we're told there in John 11 that the Pharisees, not the Sadducees, but the Pharisees actually called the Sanhedrin together. They called a meeting to say, what are we going to do with this man Jesus? He's becoming a bit too popular for our liking. And now he's raised somebody from the dead and people are following him and people are going after him. If we carry on like this, everyone will be following him. We've got to put a stop to it. They thought that Jesus was a threat to the nation and to their very existence. And in one sense, he was, because he didn't like the way that they were doing things, because they were being religious rather than following the teachings of God in the way they should. And as those people gathered, as they discussed what to do with Jesus, we are told that it was Caiaphas who, it says, as high priest. So, as I say, high priest at that time. John 11:50, he said to those gathered, you do not realize that it is better for you that one man die for the people than that the whole nation perish. So he wanted to put a stop to Jesus and the rise of Jesus, even at that time. And then a few verses later, it says that the result of this meeting, the result of this gathering, was that they begin to plot to take Jesus' life. And we're also told that Jesus was a bit more discreet about where he went and what he did at that time and after that time. And then we arrive at the readings that we've had and this trial. We read from Matthew's account how they all gathered, the Sanhedrin gathered, looking for evidence to crucify Jesus. It's assumed that this trial took place on that Thursday evening after Jesus had been arrested. And basically, Caiaphas contravened procedures to have this meeting, to have this trial, because the Sanhedrin didn't meet at holy times. They did their business at other times. So they didn't meet at holy times. So they didn't meet. And it's also assumed that it was at Caiaphas's house, which was a large house. And although we're told all the Sanhedrin was there, some of them mightn't got the memo. You know, you couldn't have sent them a text or an email. Well, people don't read those anyway, do they? But, you know, they couldn't have just contacted them. You know, as I've said before, Kezia has said to us on more than one occasion, how did you survive without mobile phones? Well, we did. We organised things and we planned things. But they came together at Caiaphas's house. They were looking for evidence to crucify Jesus, but they couldn't find any, even though they called many witnesses, false witnesses. Mark tells us that they didn't agree, they couldn't agree. I know it was a bit rushed, but you thought they'd have had a word with them outside, wouldn't you, before they brought them in to make sure the stories tallied, if they really wanted to build a case. And then finally we're told that two came forward. And they said, this fellow, Jesus, said, I am able to destroy the temple of God and build it in 3 days. They are referring to what John recorded in John 2, verse 19. But a few verses on from John 2, 19, it says that Jesus wasn't referring to the actual temple, but to himself. And it was a sign of the crucifixion, of being raised again in 3 days. The time was getting closer. Even though these people brought false accusations, they couldn't agree their story. It seems that Caiaphas is getting more and more angry, more and more frustrated as he sits there and listens to all that is going on, perhaps disappointed with the accusations. They're not good enough. They're not detailed enough. But then when these two say about the fact of what Jesus is supposed to have said, he gets up and he demands Jesus to answer them. He says, answer them. Tell us if you are the Christ, the Son of God. And Jesus replies, it is as you say. In Mark's account, he says that Jesus says, I am. I am the Christ, the Son of God. And you can almost see Caiaphas jumping with delight as he shouts, we've got him. We can pin this on him. Blasphemy, he shouts, blasphemy. How can anyone say they are the Son of God? He tears his clothes and indicates that Jesus has blasphemed, and what more evidence do we need that he is worthy of death? Others, we're told, spat in Jesus's face and mocked him. But in reality, however powerful Caiaphas was, he or the chief priests didn't have the authority to put anyone to death. That was the Romans to sort out. So, from what I said earlier, he sends him to his mate Pilate and says, finish the job. Put the rubber stamp on it. But as you know, Pilate is advised by his wife to have nothing to do with the trial. I don't know whether you gentlemen agree or whether you know that wives are very useful partners. They can impart words of wisdom in situations. I'm not looking at anyone in particular because I'll get accused of all sorts of things. But on this occasion, Pilate's wife's advice was very sound. And we're told eventually Pilate washes his hands and says, well, there's nothing I can do about it. And he couldn't do anything, even though he tried. He said, well, do you want Barabbas or do you want Jesus? I think he picked probably the worst criminal he could find, thinking they just would not want him released after all that he'd done. He was onto a sure thing. It was a way out for him. But the influence of the chief priests amongst the crowd, they whipped up the people. And Jesus is condemned to death. Those words that Sandy read to us, Matthew 27, from 41. Though Graham read to us Matthew 27, 41 onwards. We're told that as people were accusing and mocking and making fun of Jesus, they joined in the same way the chief priests, the teachers of the law and the elders mocked him. He saved others, they said, but he can't save himself. He is the king. He's the king of Israel. Let him come down now from the cross and we will believe in him. He trusts in God. Let God rescue him now if he wants him. For he said, I am the Son of God. You can almost hear the mocking taunts, the jeering that was going on as they said that. And it mentions there the chief priests, but the word used is a word that incorporates all the priests. The plural incorporates all the priests. So the assumption is that Caiaphas would have been there as well, making sure that everything was carried out. There was no way Jesus was going to get away. If you've been following the thoughts I've been sending out this earlier in the week, you will know that we've been reflecting on the temptations of Jesus at the end of his time in the wilderness. But I think this is another temptation for Jesus. Humanly speaking, how he would have loved to have got down from that cross. Would he have done it for a few moments, just to stand there and say, see, I can do it. Now I'm getting back up on the cross. I often wondered as a boy why he didn't do that. Would have been great, wouldn't it? They said they'd believe in him. It was a quick way to get them to believe in him. He must have longed to get off that cross. But Jesus was bigger than that. He saw the big picture. He knew the big picture. He knew why he was on that cross. He knew he had to die for the sins of the people as the final sacrifice. He knew that in 3 days he would rise again. But that doesn't detract from the pain and the anguish and the suffering that he would have been going through at that time. And there are stories and accounts of so many people who, when they're tortured and when they're beaten, give the information that the people are after. Some don't, but that temptation to just say the word, I think I mentioned it before, when we were up in the Midlands, we went to an evening that Open Doors put on where they had two ladies who'd been imprisoned in the worst jail in Iran, I think it was. And they were, they'd been there. And every day, they said, their jailers came to them and said, if you deny this Jesus, you can walk out of here. And every day they said, we cannot deny him. And somebody one of the ladies said, many people have asked us, why not? You could have asked for forgiveness when you got out or something. And this lady just said, how can you deny somebody that you love when you think of what he's done for us? Jesus was dying for us all. He was there, and only he and his Father realized the true significance of what he was doing on that cross. As we said, as the high priest, it's likely Caiaphas would have been there, making sure Jesus was finished off, joining in the insults, even strutting around, saying, look what I've done for you. Look what I've sorted out. I was instrumental in bringing this about. The deed was done. But still, we're told a bit later, after Jesus had died and was reburied, that the chief priests wanted to make sure that Jesus stayed dead. They wanted to make sure that the disciples didn't come and steal the body. In Matthew 27 from verse 62, the chief priests and the Pharisees went to Pilate and they said, "We remember that while he was alive, this deceiver said, 'After 3 days I will rise again.' So give an order for the tomb to be made secure until the third day. Otherwise his disciples may come and steal the body and tell all the people that he has been raised from the dead." They wanted to make as sure as possible that what Jesus said would not come true. The chief priests were instrumental in putting that guard there, and we know that it was to no avail. They knew that any resurrection claim would be detrimental not only to their position, but also to their beliefs, not believing in life after death and everything else. So what can we learn and be aware of from Caiaphas and his involvement with the death of Jesus? The first thing as the high priest is that he was a very religious man. And when faced with the Messiah, he failed to recognize him. And it's very easy for us as nonconformists to point the finger at other people and say, "Oh, they're religious." But we're all religious in a way. Over the years, some people have said to me, "Oh, I didn't realize you're a religious man." And I've replied, "I hope I'm not. I hope I'm not a religious man." But there are things in each of our lives that we're religious about. I trust that it's my relationship with Jesus that is, as we said before, the important factor, not the forms and not the things that we do. It seems he thought more of his position and wealth than his relationship with God. And that too can creep into our churches. You may well know, I've known people who have been in a position for 50 plus years in a church, and they'll tell you nobody else wants to do the job. The reality is they don't want to give it up. And then people say, "Well, we can't say anything to them, it'll upset them." But in reality, the work of God is bigger than any one of us. And any one of us can be guilty of standing in the way. He wanted to look good and have favor with those who had power, which is why it's thought he lasted so long as a high priest. I don't know whether I've told you this story, but it just shows. I mean, in certain churches, the deacons and the ministers, not so much now, but in years gone by, the deacons and the ministers were put on a pedestal. They had the best seats. They sat in the best places. They, they did. They got the best jobs. I mean, one church we went to see if they wanted us to be their minister, and we wanted to go there. I went into the room before the service to pray with the deacons, and there was a table and chairs round, and at the end of the table was this armed chair. And I just sat on one of the chairs, and the secretary came in and looked at me, and he said, "What are you doing there, minister?" I won't tell you which country I was in. I was in Britain. I worked in which part of the country? "What are you doing there, minister?" I'm saying, "Well, just sat here." "That's the minister's chair." And I said, "No, I'm all right here, thank you." "That's the minister's chair." We never went there. But what I was going to tell you was a friend of mine who was a Baptist minister. He told me the story of when he was a young minister in a church. They were having a baptismal service, and the church up the road heard they were having a baptismal service, and the minister of that church contacted him and said, "I've got this young man who is desperate to be baptized. Would you consider including him in your baptismal service?" And he said, "Well, I can ask the deacons." This is going back probably 50 years, so things have changed a bit since then, hopefully. But he said, "I can ask the deacons and see what they thought." It was apparently quite a long conversation as to whether they should baptize somebody who was not of their church. And eventually they agreed, but they said that he couldn't sit with the candidate, their candidates, at the front of the church. He had to sit at the back of the church, and when it was time, he could then come forward and be baptized. So this minister, Colin, he said he spoke to them, and the man was just so desperate to get baptized that, "I don't care," he said, "I just want to be baptized. I'll sit at the back." So anyway, Colin baptized the candidates from his church. And I should say, when I said about deacons having the front seats, on occasions like this, all the deacons sat in the front row to make sure everything was done properly. You know, keep an eye on proceedings. So they're all sat there, and 50 years ago, in their suits and everything else. He'd gone. Colin looked up and he looked at this man and he just called him forward. Well, this man got up, so excited about being baptized, protocol went out the window. He ran down the church and just jumped into the baptistry. The water went up and over the deacons who were sat in the front row. Colin baptized this man and went off. The outcome, the deacons decreed that nobody from outside their church would ever be baptized in their church again. Colin, being Colin, thought it was absolutely hilarious. We can all be religious. We can all have our bits and pieces. Caiaphas wanted power and authority. As one writer puts it, Caiaphas's story is a tragic one. Caiaphas was someone who was faced with the reality of who Jesus is and yet denied the truth that literally stood before him. As high priest, Caiaphas had wealth, an honourable position, and the respect of the people, but he was deficient in the one area that truly matters, saving faith in Jesus Christ. May we not be guilty of any of the same, seeking power, popularity, wealth, and all the things the world tries to hold as important. It holds them before us, but ensure that we do know who Jesus is and have a real relationship with him, because that is what really matters. And as we sing our closing song, it says there, kings and